All right. So I want to speak this evening a bit more about emptiness. And I hope that that's going to be suitable for us. But if at any point it feels it's not, then yeah, vote with your feet. Feel free not to listen to more of it if it doesn't feel supportive and helpful, or you know, just close your ears, go off into something else. But hopefully it will be supportive, and I hope that the way that I will speak about it will not just feel trippy or disorienting or anything like that, but actually really practical and useful and applicable in our lives. It might still be helpful for you, from your side, that you also have a job tonight, to keep remembering that this is all about metta. Yeah, this is all in the service of metta. If it doesn't sound like I'm talking about things that are increasing the amounts of metta in our experience, I am, right? So kind of reminding yourself of that kind of principle, yeah. So have we talked a lot about emptiness on this retreat so far? It could be, you know, some might shake their head and say, no, you know, you haven't even mentioned it. You know, it's like, haven't had it since the first night. There's nothing about it, you know. And on the other hand, people might think, you don't stop talking about it. I mean, just leave it alone, you know, it's all the time, bringing it into everything that you're doing. So the amount that we've talked about emptiness is also empty of being any one particular way. And that's what we mean by it, right? That it's a principle that suggests things are not fixed this way or that way. It depends how you look at it. Depends how much you were expecting it. Depends how much you like it. Depends on a lot of things, right? So emptiness, as we've already said, is pointing out that things are not one particular way. There are other ways this experience could be. Therefore, we would say this experience is empty. It's empty. It might be helpful at certain times to see things have an infinite way that they could be. Might be. But it's sufficient to say that something's empty if you can sense that it could be another way. Yeah? It's empty. It's possible that it could be another way. Yeah? We've kind of seen this through like the Vedana explorations, yeah? Hopefully we've noticed through the ways of meeting experience, we can start to shift this experience from pleasant to unpleasant, unpleasant to pleasant. We kind of play along that way, yeah? Hopefully particularly from the unpleasant to the pleasant side. But it also reveals emptiness in the fact, could you make this moment any worse? Yep, great. Okay, so it must be empty then, right? It's empty of being any one particular way. Yeah, so, and if you can do that, you can probably do the opposite. And also you deserve excellent praise for not having already made it worse than it already is. Yeah. And all of this reveals that sense that it's empty. All meditations, whatever they're doing, however they're operating, if they're having any impact on experience, they rely on the fact that everything is empty. They rely on that. Everything is empty. If anything were fixed in, has to be this way, like it has some dictatorial core, I will only appear this way. And everything else would just get rammed up against it continuously. Necessary for everything to have that level of fluidity, at least in the way that we perceive it. Yeah. And we can only talk about the way that we perceive it. Yeah. It would be ridiculous for us who are perceiving creatures to talk about things that are beyond our perception. Yeah. What feels like reality is the perception of reality. And the perceptions that we have are empty of being one way or another way. Okay, so we've gotten that far, and it might feel okay. But then why are we using this word empty, emptiness, which has kind of other meanings in the dictionary? Like, I feel so empty. Yeah. I have this little joke that I like to say, that we explore how life becomes empty and meaningful. Because oftentimes you hear it's how life becomes empty and meaningless, right? But actually, it's by its empty nature, it can become so much more meaningful. We can guide it towards meaningfulness. So, emptiness, and I was actually reminded of this by Tamar, you were correcting yourself in your question earlier when you said boring. I know, boring is an adjective, right? Emptiness is an adjectival noun. Very complex thing, but they turn up all over the place. And it's not a noun, and it's much better to go probably for the pure adjective. This thing is empty. But metta and empty just doesn't make sense. Yeah, it's a title for a retreat. So we go for the adjectival noun. But then you have to kind of fix this whole thing. So it's not a noun. We don't mean to use it here in the sense of a noun. We're not talking about a place that is really empty, like some kind of spaciousness, right? It's not the spaciousness that is the emptiness that we're looking for. Now, when we see that something is empty, sometimes, yeah, we see that not only could it, it's not only this one way, it's maybe not this way either, it's actually not fixed in being any particular way. A spaciousness can open up, yeah? But that's like a correlate of that experience. It's like, oh, I feel really spacious. But it's helpful for us at this point not to define that that's what emptiness means. What emptiness means is that it's empty. And so it's probably more helpful to say, this Vedana is empty. This perception of reality is empty. Empty of what? Empty of being one way. Empty of having a dictatorial core which demands, I have to be this way, I can't be any other way, take me as I am. Yeah. So, you'd be perceived in many, many ways. So, does that make sense? All right. Feel free to say it doesn't make sense, because I prefer the truth at this point. No, just a wave. Thanks. It's also not really a verb to say that this is empty, right? Like, it's not that we are making it empty. It has that nature. When we investigate it, we notice that it can change. It's empty of being that way. Yeah. So the particular thing that I want to talk about as being empty this evening is our sense of self. And this is a kind of a delicate area because we can pick this up in good ways, helpful ways, beneficial ways, freeing ways. We can also pick this up in unhelpful ways, harsh ways, self-negating kind of ways at times. So let's stay light, fun. We're just going to talk about the sense of self. Those senses of self will be hurt in the making of this evening's talk. Yeah. So we talked a little bit about thinking when I started the talk I gave a couple of nights ago. And I want to just touch in again on this this idea as a way of kind of coming towards the sense of self. So we notice, sorry, something's tickling me. Okay, not sure what it was. We can notice that we can have experiences where thoughts get more quiet. Yeah, you notice that sometimes you can have an experience of, oh, it's so much nicer to have some gaps between the thinking. And we can then feel better experiences have less thoughts in them. And then the thought arises within us. It's also a thought. I don't want to think anymore. Yeah, thoughts are what are stopping me from being free. It's these darn thoughts. If I didn't have these thoughts, I'd be happy. I don't know what I'd think about being happy, but I wouldn't be thinking, and that would be great. Yeah, and that kind of fantasy arises for us, that thoughts are my enemy. Thoughts are the thing that stop me being free. And we start to practice in ways that has this idea. Freedom means freedom from thinking. Now, that's quite a kind of a narrow little pocket of freedom. You know, we could imagine that the Buddha was practicing, and then stopped thinking, and then lived the rest, you know, however many 60 years of teaching without having a single thought ever again. That's an interesting idea, but probably it's more if this Buddha is claiming an enormous sense of freedom. It's freedom with thinking, not freedom from thinking. And in fact, there's very clear passages in the teachings where the Buddha praises thoughts of generosity, thoughts of kindness, yeah, thoughts of compassion, thoughts of harmlessness. Yeah. So these kind of thoughts can open us, develop us, change us. So thoughts are significant, but perhaps we need a very delicate, nuanced, intelligent, mature kind of relationship with thoughts, which we probably also need to have in relationship to ourself, our sense of self. Yeah. And when we're having certain experiences, we might notice the more metta there is, the less me there is. All that me is turned into metta, metta, metta. No me here, just lovely, lovely, lovely. And that's the kind of experience I like to have. And then it fades and I come back and it's me again. I've got so much metta for everyone, but not you. Get out of here. You know, we're having a good time. And then again, you know, the self, like the thoughts, becomes the enemy of my freedom. The opposite of my freedom is self. And again, with thoughts, it can be really beautiful when the self sense quiets down. They are delightful, beautiful, enriching experiences. And it's worth understanding it that way. But is it a freedom from or a freedom with? A freedom that is not dependent on this and that. A freedom that sees that the self is empty. Empty of being any one particular way, and also empty of being a problem from its own side. It's something I can make a problem, and it's something I can allow not to be a problem. And hopefully, where we're going, what we're going to explore is going to open that. So I'm already going to apologize if this goes long, but I want it to be thorough enough and enjoyable enough and also applicable enough. So you may notice that the talks that we give in the evening are to set up the instructions or suggestions the next day so that we don't have to think about things too much. So, there's always a sense of self whenever there is a sense of anything. There's always a sense of self whenever there is a sense of anything. That sense of self many times can be very, very quiet, very not obvious, but it must be there because there's somebody here who is having an experience. In the teachings, we can go to places where there is not a sense of self, but there is also not a sense of experience. There's nothing happening. There is no sense of time. There's also no sense of space. This thing is called Nibbana or Nirvana. And yeah, in that experience, you could say there is no sense of self. There's no sense of anything else. So for as long as there isn't anything else, there will be a sense of self perceiving that thing, knowing that thing. It's how we speak about it. The sense of self is not a fixed thing, and we know that because we go through an experience where it's louder, it's larger, it's more involved, it's more central. And then there are other times where it's subtler, it's quieter, it's less active, it's more ephemeral. And we might have a preference for one or the other, but we notice that it changes. If it changes, it's empty. Yeah, it changes, it's empty. If it's not just one thing, not just one way. By recognizing that it changes, I hope we're also seeing I can play a part in that change. I'm not dictated to what kind of sense of self I'm going to have. I can play my part. And one of the ways that I think the teachings seem to reveal what is this sense of self is that this sense of self is the activity of what is unfolding. That what defines that sense of self is the way that it's relating, the way that it's engaging, the way that it's looking, the way that it's holding its experience, and that forms who we feel ourselves to be in that moment. Additionally to that, we have this whole thing that we feel like it's I've always been me. Yeah. And that's a different part of that sense of self. I don't know quite where it begins for each of us. I don't even really know where it begins for me, where I first started feeling I was me. But I've been through quite a growing body and quite a range of heart-mind qualities. And yeah, it still feels like there's this conviction. It's been me all the way through. You know, I've been this, I've been that, I've done this, I've done that. But it was me who did all of those things. Doesn't quite add up to investigation, but let's say that that's the way that we feel. Yeah. So at this point, are we clear about what we might mean by a sense of self? This thing that gets louder, can be quieter. At other times, we might speak about different aspects of the sense of self, like a sense of personality or identity. And it gets really kind of complicated if we grab the wrong end of what we're talking about here. For example, if we say like a quieter sense of self, or less sense of self, if we went to that angle, it's like, is that talking about like when you have like a low self-esteem, right? Like a low self-belief, right? The self-view that has low self-esteem actually has quite a loud sense of self. So it can be kind of confusing as to what we're talking about. But we're talking about like that volume of that sense of self. If you think about that sense of self that happens when someone says, wow, what you did was so brilliant. We have this, oh yeah, that was pretty good. And in the teachings, tradition, they have this example of like, if you can't find your sense of self, just imagine that someone points at you in a crowd and says, thief, you thief. And everyone turns around to look at you. That one who receives the accusation and all those glares, that's that sense of self. You see it like, whoa, gets very big and it feels very problematic in that moment. Another fun one that we can notice with the sense of self is imagine if when you came into the hall this evening and you saw somebody sitting on your spot. You know, why? Not like this. No. Or another one is, you know, say you've just come away from the pots, you filled up your plate, you sit down. Someone comes along and starts helping themselves from your plate onto their plate. He's like, no, you go to the pots. You don't take from this. These are mine. And it's like, this isn't my plate, and I've only just taken this from the collective pots. And it can be interesting as an investigation. At what point did that become mine? There was soup in a ladle carried here. This thing, when did this become mine? But it's my bowl. And it hits there, and suddenly the sense of self is, I think you'll find this is my soup. And it's the same as everyone else's soup. Don't be so easily fooled, you know. And if someone dips their spoon into my bowl, that would be practically a crime. I mean, there would be notes would be written. So it's interesting to see where it comes from. But it's like it's ready to leap in. Yeah, we're ready to take ownership of things. We're ready to identify with things, and that's the sense of self that we're interested in exploring. Yeah, it doesn't really matter what it's doing, but it just can be interesting to see that. Yeah. we don't want to make a problem out of something that's just a function. You know, that's just what happens, right? But when it does become problematic, it is helpful if we can see what would it be like to lessen the amount of identification in that experience. When I was thinking about the plates, I was thinking about those. I really love an Ethiopian restaurant. I haven't been to Ethiopia, but I've eaten Ethiopian food. And it's like big plate, and everybody sits around. No one plate. Those kinds of feelings. And I love the taste of the food, but I also really like that kind of attitude. Although I was thinking about it, they still kind of imaginarily give it to you in kind of sections, but kind of don't cross the line. But it will come in. It'll kind of get involved. But there's something interesting about the fluidity, the flow. And so in the teachings, there's various places where we're invited to investigate what does that sense of myself rely upon? Yeah. And I hope you also hear this in the language. I'm talking about the sense of self. I'm not talking about the self. There are certain things that we don't get to know the self. Yeah. We get to know the sense of that self as it appears in awareness. Does that make sense? There's a different thing. Yeah. No, a bit more about that. So like, in this moment, you are aware. Yeah? You're aware? You can have a sense of being aware as well as being aware. That's like a bonus gift that you get with awareness. You also get a sense of being aware. But that's not awareness, right? That sense of your awareness is also appearing in awareness. Yeah? So awareness is just behind that. Now, do you sense that? Right? But if you sense that, you're sensing that within awareness as well. Yeah? And I'm just being tricky. I'm just being clear that we can't prove or refute the existence of awareness because it would only appear within awareness and that would be it. That makes sense? Confusing but makes sense? That's the kind of space I'm aiming for. Confusing but makes sense. Okay. Then it's the same with the sense of self, right? The one who knows the sense of self. Well, can you know that one? Who would know that one? Like, that would just be another dimension of my sense of self, knowing my sense of self, right? But the sense of self is a quality in my experience, as we said. Like, for example, when there's more metta, or there's more samadhi, or there's more well-being, or there's more harmonization, there's more interconnection, my sense of self changes. And my sense of self is an aspect of my experience. And that can be more free, and it can be less free. And because it can be more free, we're not aiming to get rid of the sense of self, but we're also interested in exploring, could we go directly towards reducing that sense of self? And the next section of the talk is just looking at the use of the mind to investigate the existence of that sense of self and see if we can soften it up a little bit. Not chase it out of existence, but like just like, oh, invite it to come out. It's like, am I identified with this? So essentially, we might either be associated with, identified with, or feel a sense of ownership of our body or our intellect, our mind, yeah, at any time. Like, we might feel like, I am thinking, I am angry, this is my body. Just as I think, this is my mat, this is my bowl, this is my soup, get out of my space, you know, whatever else I've taken ownership of. Just start to question it as we come in. Is this your body? Now, I'm not saying it's anybody else's, right? But, I mean, you really haven't been taking care of it. So, you have. You've been doing really great. But, like, do you beat the heart? Do you digest the food? Yeah. Did you build those muscles yourself? Yeah. Did you make those eyes? In a way, this body is nature more than it's mine. You could argue, if you were argumentative like me, you could argue that, you know. And this is actually more something for us to look after than to own. And I like to use this example that if I borrow something from someone, I really look after it. When it's mine, I might leave my coat on the floor, but my friend's coat goes back in the cupboard. Yeah, look after that well. And so we might feel, well, if you say this isn't my body, who's going to look after it? I think that when I think this is nature's body, and it's my responsibility to take care of it, yeah, like I take care of the nature around me, you know, I make sure it's as well nourished and well protected for the well-being of all beings. For me, it's an upgrade. There's like an upgrade, lessening that identification with the body. So I like to do it. If you also like to do it, then you might also like to do it towards the mind as well. And that could be reason enough. Like, it might not make sense to you. You'd say, no, 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 this is definitely my mind. Right? And I really wouldn't recommend anyone else coming in here. You know, just leave it to me. It's, I haven't tidied up. I wasn't expecting guests. But what happens in our thinking is, we said before, you know, you don't think you're going to think that. You just find yourself thinking it. And then you can end up identifying with it, taking ownership of it, fighting against it. And how would it be to say, this isn't me doing this? These are not my thoughts. Just in the same way as we can still have a bowl and be thinking, this is not my soup. This does not belong to me. But I will use this to feed, to serve, to nourish, to look after this body, according to what's good for the body, according to what's good for this piece of nature. But our mind isn't just our thoughts. It's also our Vedana. Who made the Vedana? Having gotten a little bit familiar with it over these days, do you kind of notice it just seems to happen? And then you notice, oh, there's this Vedana, that Vedana. And if you take it through your life, you notice things that you prefer. You usually prefer the pleasant things, the nice things, and you dislike the not nice things. That changes over a life. Then you think about foods that you like now, you didn't used to like, or things that you don't like now that you used to really like. Tastes change. And we can feel really identified with those tastes at that time, but then they change. We forget about the old ones. No, this is my taste. Are you kidding me? You think I like that? You know, and that changes. And yet we still feel like I've always been me, but my tastes can change. Yeah. My thoughts can change. My opinions can change. And in the teachings, I don't know how far we'll go with it now, but like, we go through all of this and we say, yeah, I'm not my body. I'm not the Vedana. I'm not even the preferences that associate with those Vedanas. I'm not my thoughts. I don't even make my own intentions. They arise within me according to values which I feel deeply, but I don't remember creating them. This love, this importance, this peacefulness, these are all things that arise. I feel very identified with it. But if they change, I would be still me, just having different thoughts, feelings, emotions, intentions, volitions. Willingness to act. And we might say, ah, so I'm the knowing of all of this. That's who, that's me. I'm the knowing of all of this. I'm the perceiving of all of this. But really, how do you perceive this? How do you know this? Isn't it amazing that we perceive this room this way? With all its details, with all its color, with all its shapes, all its definitions, and the sounds as well, the distant sounds, sound distant. The whole perception, the whole making of this experience is fantastically well done. Was that really you? Did you do that? Because, I mean, that's a work of art. I mean, it's so lifelike. Or are you the one knowing it, the witnessing of it? And if that's the case, how is that different than anyone else witnessing and knowing it? Why is there any sense of identification with that? We're kind of pulling away at all of these threads and just thinking, well, who are you? This constant flux and change. So either you're identifying with something that's so impersonal that it's not personal at all, the perception, knowing. Or anything that's personal just keeps changing. And yet, yeah, but that's me. That's me. I'm always changing. It's unpredictable me. Yeah. That's how you know it's me, because I never appear the same twice. Yeah. It's hard to pin it down. And we could go through this as a type of analysis type of practice, and that can open out something, you know, very spacious, very lovely, whatever. All of these things change. Yeah, I feel to be one. And that's really curious. How many people here have heard of Jay Garfield? He's done some nice work in translations and explorations. Yeah. So Jay shared this teaching in a place sometime. I think it was in the States. And I heard about it, but I think it's really fun. So if we think about the body, wouldn't it be nice if we could swap out our body with like someone else's body just for a little while, you know, just for a few moments? And Jay suggests that for themselves, they're going to borrow Usain Bolt's body just for the 7 seconds or whatever it takes for them to run the 100 meters, just to be in that body for that experience. Yeah. I think for me, I would like to be a very flexible gymnast doing backflips or something. You know, whatever you want to do. Could you imagine that? And the weird thing is, many of us can. I imagine it would be me, but it would be a different body. And it would be me somehow in Usain Bolt's body as I just do that run. And then I kind of get out. It's like back into my body. But like, that was fun. Thanks. And so we have that kind of flexibility, right? We have that flexibility of mind to actually see it could even go that far. And the same can happen with the mind. It's like, whose mind do you want to be in? Whose creativity, whose ingenuity, whose simplicity, maybe? And I think Jay picks like Stephen Hawking's, wanting to be able to understand big bangs or something like this. But you could pick your favorite composer or whatever, yeah. Or artist, poet. Just spend a bit of time seeing through their eyes, their perception, their experience, their ideas, their ideations. And it would still be me in some way. So then comes this kind of question, so who is this me? What am I if I can change all of that? It's like a stubborn stain. And it's like you scrubbed it out and then it dries and it's back again. How did you... I wiped you out of existence. You're back. So we're using this exploration of the self as something that's empty, but it's not the only thing that's empty. Everything's empty. Everything. It's not the same as the parts, and it can't be found separate from them. And the example that's sometimes used is like a chair. If you imagine a wooden chair here in my hand. I'm holding one leg. There's three other legs, there's the flat bit, there's the back. Now, if we kind of take this leg off, and this leg off, and this leg off, and we just lay them down, throw them away, whatever. Now we don't have a chair, really. You know, we just have the seat and the back. We take those two apart, we take them into smaller bits. Right, now we've just got these bits spread around. Where's the chair gone? And then we put them back, but the chair appears again. Yeah, take them apart. There is no chair here. Put them together, a chair appears. So the concept of chair depends on the parts, but it's not in the parts, because you can have parts but no chair. And you put them together and you get a chair again. But where does the chair go in the space in between? Does that make sense? And maybe the self is a bit like that, right? Now, all the bits keep changing. Hey, here I am. Oh, that's me again. So different. Now I'm the angry me. You remember, you know. And now I'm the really peaceful, loving me. You know, that was always me inside. You know? And at each time, there's this really strong feeling that this is the real me. Yeah, this is the real me. And we have that fluctuation as we go through our meditations, you know. It's like, oh, I'm so glad that, you know, frustrated, irritated, could get settled, me has gone. And now it's the peaceful. The real peaceful me, you know, the real subtle me, whatever. And then it switches again. It's like, I can't believe I pretended that I was that peaceful me, because now this is the real me. This is how it's really is. Yeah. curious to see that. But it's empty. And it's important to see that empty is not an insult to things. Yeah. We're not talking about that spaciousness. We're not saying you're a vacuity, you know, you're in a world of fullness, you are empty. Yeah. It's not everything. It's the fluidity, which means it can always be played with. This is the point in this talk where I want to say we've been playing around with kind of like a truth claim. Can you claim really to be yourself from your own side? But that's just to soften us up, because we want to make this like a lever, a thing that we can pull, move, a dial that we can turn, more self, less self. Yeah. Ease back, bring it forward. So I've had the pleasure of meeting almost half of you through the group meetings. Something I've mentioned a few times is that as we close out of the group meetings, that sense of self that was necessary for that experience to unfold can now fade back down again. And one of the really delightful things that we have on retreats, one of the aspects I think that many of us really enjoy, even if we wouldn't necessarily put it in those words, is the absence of the need to be somebody in front of other people. We have the joy of being with other people without needing to be somebody special, somebody funny, somebody intelligent, somebody, you know, I have to listen to them or move them. It's like that freedom of that. Really, really lovely. So in a sense, enough of the analytics now. Let's actually get pragmatic. Yeah. Let's get down to the things. Like, what can we do with this? So if we see that the self-sense is affected by metta, do we all agree about that? Would we all be happy with that as a description? Like when metta as a experience is flowing well. Yeah. So there's kind of two versions of metta. There's metta the practice. And I just want to really honor those who are doing the practice but not necessarily feeling a lot of increase in friendliness and kindness. Anyone who does metta practice in a place where there doesn't feel to be a lot of metta, you are my hero. Yeah. Like, this is what the world needs. People who add kindness into an experience that is feeling like it's really lacking in it. Yeah. That's such an important thing to do. It's such an important skill to have. So, yeah, blessings to that. Those times when it does open, it does feel like it's present. Would we all agree that the self-sense, the self-centeredness, the self-importance fades down? Yeah, it's part of what describes that experience and part of what describes the freeing feeling, the liberating feeling of that experience. So a feature of the felt sense of freedom is this quietening of the self-sense. And as I alluded to earlier, the Buddha's definition of the self is non-essence to the self, but an activity to the self. What are you doing? What's unfolding? And when we open through metta as an activity, what, when I do it, leads to my long-term well-being and happiness? What, when I do it, leads to my long-term well-being and happiness? One of my favorite questions from the Buddha. Questions we should ask ourselves. When that happens, the activity of the self, the way we know the self is through the activity of this self. It changes, we change. Less tanha, less demand, less push-pull, more kindness. So that's to say the self is always playing a part. But what part is it playing? What part is it playing? And maybe we can see it's not something to be rid of. And our whole kind of definition is, am I then? Am I not? The Buddha didn't take a stance on that. Yeah, it's very, very hard to find yourself in this. But pop, there you are. The sense neither is nor is not. But there's ways that we can move that disentangle us from having a messy relationship with things. Yeah. Ways that we can actually unravel the sense of self when it's built up. And I want to share a teaching style with you that, as far as I know, was quite strongly developed by Rob Bebea, and I don't know if he picked it up somewhere else or how it unfolds, but develop these insight ways of looking, these ways of relating, these ways of regarding our experience as not self, as a way to see if we can move that lever. And it goes like this. We're looking at the body, yeah, feeling the body, sensing the body. And then we just say, it's not me. It's not me. And it's not mine. It does not belong to me. And you see what happens. And maybe nothing happens. Maybe we try again. It's not me. This here, this physical thing. It's not me. It's not me. It's not mine. This body doesn't belong to me. It's not mine. And at this point, maybe it's helpful to say these are not truth claims. Yeah? They're usefulness claims. How is it to hold that view? How is it to see that way? This intellect that's unfolding, that's deciding, do I like this? Do I not like this? Oh, I really like this. I'm definitely not doing this. This intellect, these thoughts, these emotions, it's not me. This is not me. It's not mine. It doesn't belong to me. And if you end up like a question mark, then who's, what, is it, whatever, maybe that's okay. Maybe that's a way of bringing the emptiness of this to mind, and it opens something. Yeah. So you can already try and experiment and explore this. We'll do it as a practice tomorrow for those who wish, and we'll do it as usual, combined with lots of metta and samadhi and kindness and softness. See what happens when we drop that in. So if it causes irritations and ripples, it can do that in a calmer pool. Don't like it much, but thanks for telling me about it. Yeah. Or is that, it's actually so much nicer, actually softened something, not so much a ripple, a non-ripple, it smooths, it softens. And if that feels too much, we can adapt that phrase. Like, it's up to us to make it our own. You know, the practice itself is empty. It doesn't have to only be one way. Like some people like to say, it's not just me. It's not just mine. Maybe that opens more a sense of interconnectivity. Yeah, it does not only belong to me. And before that, it felt like I was kind of disowning the body in some way. Yeah. And for others, if we want, we can turn it up to 11, as they say in Spinal Tap. This body doesn't belong to anyone. Doesn't belong to anyone, anywhere. It's not that it doesn't just belong to me, it doesn't belong to anyone. Yeah. It's not anyone's. And it's not anyone. So we just drop those in. They can be insightful. And what we mean by insightful ways of looking are ways of looking, ways of relating to our experience that open a different shade of freedom than we might find in other ways. And if you like that phrase, it actually comes from the Buddha, where, speaking of themselves, said, I am not anything. I am not anything belonging to anyone. I am not anything belonging to anyone anywhere. Nor is there anything belonging to me in anyone anywhere. But as the last point of this talk, I want to say a feature of the greater freedom is not just to dissolve the self, but also to know when to bring it in. To be able to dance both sides of that dial. To be willing to appear and to disappear. And finding what is the appropriate way according to the deepest wishes that occur to me. Let's have a quiet minute to go and close this session.